You probably don't know this about me, but I am actually an Eagle Scout. And to be an Eagle Scout, you have to do scout stuff, like go camping. And over the summer, my troop would like to travel to a place called Camp Geronimo, where we would live in the wilderness for 7 days. There are about 30 other scout troops that would come, and there were no cabins at the place. We had to sleep in tents. My first year at camp, my friend TJ and I just met the minimum age requirement to go. Yes, it was the same TJ from the first video. And being the good friends that we are, we decided to share a tent for the whole week. It's not weird. We were in the wilderness. We shared for survival. But we quickly learned that we weren't protecting our- This horrendous act is actually a very common prank among Boy Scouts called axe bombing. Eventually, I had to go get something from the tent, so I opened the flap thing and- I was just hit with this wall of awful smells. You think boys like the smell of axe? Nah, that stuff's friggin' gross. I'd never experienced the heinous act of axe bombing in my whole life until then. But this wasn't how I wanted it to happen. I immediately got mad, like super pissed. I went up to TJ, grabbed him by the shoulder, looked directly into his perfect face and said, "TJ, someone just axe bombed our tent." And TJ just shrugged and went, "You know what? Whatever. There's no reason to get mad. It won't help us." And TJ's response to this has actually stuck with me. I think about what he said whenever I'm stressed out about homework, or if my computer crashes and I lose all my files. It really helps calm me down. But as a 12-year-old, I said, "Psh, okay, TJ, you do you. I'm gonna go get revenge." But I had no idea who actually axe-bombed our tent, and whoever did is still a mystery to this day. But I decided to blame the 15-year-olds, with their stupid, guilty faces. I even asked them just to be sure. "Hey, did you axe-bomb my tent?" "No." "Okay." I knew it was them. And the 15-year-olds were pretty cool, but not the coolest. There still were the oh-so-famous 16-year-olds. So to help prove that they were still cool, they built a mega tent out of logs. And tent is probably an understatement for that thing. They had logs tied around trees, 5 walls, a back and a front door. It even had a log roof that some boys could stand on. And all the 15-year-olds slept under it every night. And I came up with a perfect plan to get my revenge. Sorry, I have to turn this into a 2-part thing. So anyway, thanks for watching. You can see 2 of my other videos that I've made, or a whole bunch of funny comics at my website. I mean, I'm not just gonna ask you to like, favorite, subscribe, and comment, but if you do wanna do that, you could.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate or. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something and then stop the camera and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now, animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Oh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy. They'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize. And that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime. Anime? They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings.
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kinda like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime!
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... Ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look... you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower, and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations. But no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons. But they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny. Because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me. Even I'm a rig. And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too.
Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like... shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms. Duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all of my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back. You know how when people get into a new relationship, they go through a honeymoon phase? Well, me and my girlfriend went through a is the person I'm dating a deranged murderer phase. When she first came over to my house, she thought my Nintendo figure collection was something only a psychopath would have. And she's right. When you've been living alone for so long, sometimes you just need to buy friends and put them on display. And sometimes you do this by turning people into lampshades or chairs. Luckily, I just collect hunky reptile figures. Gif doesn't actually think I'm a psychopath anymore, which is good, you know, because I don't want anyone to know the truth. However, early on in our relationship, there were some things I did that she didn't like. Like one time I was unloading the dishwasher and I was putting away the knives and Gif looked at me all concerned and I asked, "What's the matter, huh? Huh?" I don't know what made her run to the other side of the room like that when I could clearly just throw the knife at her. Yeah, she's kind of stupid. But she definitely got her point across that she didn't like me holding multiple knives and told me to cut it out. But I didn't know if she was a psychopath either though, because there are definitely some things about her that made me question her sanity. Like how she owns a $2,000 animal mascot costume, but she hates sports.
That's weird. One time when I was over at her apartment, I was looking through her freezer, assuming she had bagel bites, and I asked, "Hey babe, where's all the bagel bites?" And there was this plastic grocery bag in there, and she tells me, no, don't look in there! We don't have any bagel bites, you ate them all, remember? But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, hold on, what the frick does this chick have in her freezer that she doesn't want me to see? A freezer is not a place where you tell someone, don't look in there. You say that about underwear drawers and toilets. That's it. I don't know what we did for the next 10 minutes, because all I was thinking about was how many severed hands were in Gif's freezer. But then I thought, okay, maybe I'm overreacting. I optimistically asked, "Hey, babe, are you, perhaps keeping a surprise for me in the freezer? Like a birthday cake? My birthday's not for another 5 months, but that's the only thing I could think a person would hide in a freezer that wouldn't make them a psychopath." And she said, "Nope."
So what's in there?
Don't worry about it. Do you not see how this looks? If the doors weren't locked, I would have been out of there. I wasn't about to lose sleep over this, so I held up the knife I had from the previous joke and said, "What's in the freezer?" And she went, "It's a dead snake." You had a dead snake next to the bagel bits! So fun fact about my GIF, she owns 8 snakes. Mm-hmm. Apparently she used to own 9. I've learned that snakes are a very low-maintenance pet. You only have to feed them once every 3 years, and if you cut them in half, they turn into 2 snakes. Yeah, so I have no clue how one of her snakes could have died. And another fun fact, snakes lack the part of the brain that feels love. They're physically incapable of showing affection. So your pet Hognose would sell your soul to Snake Satan for 1 dead mouse. So she already has 8 pets that don't love her, and potentially her boyfriend too if she doesn't get rid of that freezer snake. At least my reptiles aren't dead in a freezer. I immediately start asking questions. Why do you have a dead snake in your freezer? How many other dead animals are in your freezer? What the heck's wrong with you? And she said, "I wanted to get him taxidermied, but the person I wanted to have do it was busy. Also, there's dead rats in there for my snakes." Oh, that explains why the bagel bites tasted so funny. What's extremely gross is that the snake is still in there to this day. I don't know how long the snake was in there before, but it's been well over a year since that incident. It's honestly great, though, because now she can never complain about the state of my refrigerator. I'll have potatoes that are sprouting more potatoes, grapes that are getting me tipsy, and if she points any of it out, I just respond with, "Oh, you think my refrigerator's disgusting? Yeah, Medusa? Uh-huh." One time she said, "Ah, my fridge smells terrible and I don't know why." Really? You can't think of a single reason? She said, "No, I said the fridge smells bad, not the freezer." I said, "I will flush your snake down the toilet and give you a swirly." Now that's the sign of true love, kids. But for all I know, she could totally still have severed hands in there. After dealing with the snakesicle situation, there's some other things I've learned from being in a relationship. Apparently, there are rules and etiquettes when eating food, and my girlfriend sure does love and enforce those rules. I was taught, don't put your elbows on the table, close your mouth when you're chewing unless you want to talk to someone, and make sure you eat something green every once in a while. But according to her, there's more than that. Like, did you know that bagel bites aren't a part of a balanced diet? We were at a restaurant one time, pre-COVID, and when we got our food, Gif took a napkin and put it on her lap and told me to do that as well because you're supposed to do that in a society. I looked around the restaurant and said, "But no one else has a napkin on their laps." And she said, "That's because you wanted to eat at a Denny's." I didn't know why she was such a stickler for table manners until I went to her family's place for Thanksgiving and I stepped inside and saw 2 sets of staircases in their house. And it all made sense. Oh, they're fancy and collect staircases. Going to my girlfriend's home for Thanksgiving was the first time I met a partner's parents, and I tried really, really hard to get them to like me because I'm kissing their firstborn child. I'm in the house. Dad's watching sports. I love sports, I lied. Mom's working on a puzzle. I love puzzles. They used to call me the puzzle king in high school. Her brother's playing Mario Odyssey. I love Mario. Oh, wait, I don't have to impress you. You suck at this game. In an effort to get them to like me more, I brought a gift for Gif's family. I got them a little baby cactus because it's small and prickly and doesn't like to be touched. Just like her. Ooh, ow, babe, no, no, babe, it was a joke, babe, I'm sorry!
Gift's Thanksgiving meal was the polar opposite of my family's Thanksgiving. My family does Thanksgiving with two other families, and they all come together with mashed potatoes, and everyone gets in a line with paper plates, and we all have one big mashed potato potluck. Then I sit at the kids' table to avoid talking about politics. Gift's family used real plates and had candles, and everyone puts a napkin on their lap. I felt like Shrek at Fiona's castle. They had three forks of various sizes, but I still wanted them to like me, so I wasn't about to point out that it made no sense to use three different forks to eat a meal. This must be why Gif is so afraid of knives. All these cutlery options are bringing up childhood traumas of going up all the stairs. But Gif's family was so fancy that I actually didn't even meet them on Thanksgiving. My memory just filled in that we were having a Thanksgiving meal. Gif read this script and was like, "You know you didn't meet them on Thanksgiving, right? That was just a regular Tuesday brunch. That wasn't even a meal to be thankful for? Why'd we talk about politics so much?" One of the big political debates we have is that Gif tells me I wear dad socks. But I don't think she understands my genius. You see, if I buy and wear the same pair of socks for the rest of my life, I'll never have to worry about matching socks ever again. So I've already picked out the socks that I'm going to be wearing at my funeral. And as we were wrapping up our non-thankful meal, I got up from the table, and Gif's dad said, "Hey, I have those socks." So I guess she's right about some things. And her dad totally likes me now. In the end, as long as I make Gif happy, then I know her parents will like me, no matter what socks I wear. And as long as you're with someone who makes you a happier person, then they're a good partner too. Even if they refuse to throw away the dead snake they've had in their freezer for almost 3 years.
And action.
So, Mr. James,
is it rolling?
Yes.
And action.
So, Mr. James, is it true that you wrote a book?
Oh, that thing? Yes, the rumors are true. One afternoon, I was just thinking to myself, why aren't I a published author yet? So I just jotted down some notes and doodles, and then I thought, you know, people should pay money for this.
So, like, it's just a bunch of pictures?
No, I added words, too. It's a collection of stories and opinions of mine, some of which I've already made into videos, and some that are completely original new stories. Like, one chapter is all about the science fair, and yeah, it is the same story I used in the YouTube video, but I also go more in depth with the story, and I draw new pictures.
YouTubers have a reputation of writing bad books. Does this concern you?
Oh, bad books, huh? I'll have you know that my book was the number one best-selling book in literature, criticism, and theory. Do I know what that means? No. But did I beat Tyrant, Shakespeare on politics? Yes. Does that mean I'm better than William Shakespeare himself? I'll let you be the judge when you pick up your copy of the book, link in the description.
I'll give you a clue. The answer is yes.
Are all authors as condescending as you?
Do you even know what that word means?
James, is there anything special that happens to people who order at VidCon?
Yeah, the people who pre-order at VidCon get a signed copy.
What about people who aren't going to VidCon?
Sucks to be them.
Cut, come on.
Haha, that was a good joke. So I actually am going to be selling signed copies. I'll be signing the first 1,000 copies to people who pre-order the book on my website. Check the link in the description. Also, speaking of my site, I've revamped the whole thing and got a bunch of new merchandise. Check it out if you have some free time. Christmas is right around the corner, guys. There's also non-signed copies available if you just want to pre-order it regularly. Or you can wait until August when the book comes out and buy it at Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore. And depending on how well these signed copies sell, I'll release more. We'll see. If you're interested, then I'll update everything on Twitter, so follow me on Twitter to be updated. Anyway, authors sure can be stuck up sometimes. Like this one time when this pretty well-established author was coming to my town and was doing a signing. I say well-established, but I'm sure if I said his name, you guys wouldn't actually know who he is. Anyway, at his signing, he gave an hour-long talk, and he said he wasn't going to do a Q&A segment because he said he'd been an author for so long that he felt that he already answered every question ever. Okay, Mr. Yahoo Answers, sorry our questions bothered you so much. And then after you listen to him talk, you gotta go up to meet him to get a book signed, but he was the most stereotypical I'm too good for you celebrity I've ever seen. When you got to his table, he didn't say anything to you, and if you wanted a picture, he wouldn't even look up at the camera. So my family has this picture of all of us standing and smiling next to this guy just looking down reading a book. So I will follow in that author's footsteps and only take pictures with fans while signing my book and looking like this.
Contrast to that when I met Steven Pastis. Pastis? I should have looked up how to say it. He's the creator of a comic strip called Pearls Before Swine, and all you need to know is that his comics are in the newspaper, and he's really great. He came to visit Arizona, and I was 15 at the time, so I was making stick figure comics, and I wanted to impress Steven, so I got out my ruler and protractor, and I very carefully drew this comic. How was your run? Well, let's just say Justin is all pooped out. What happened?
I don't want to talk about it.
Get it? He pooped his pants. This isn't based off anything in real life, okay? I was 15. Shut up. I went to his book signing. He was really awesome. I showed him my comic. He laughed and he told me to keep going. And now I'm a YouTuber. I mean, it wasn't just what he said that got me into doing comics and YouTube. I wanted to do that way before I met him. Anyway, he was nice. Ironically enough, I was never a fan of reading, and I think a big part of it was that teachers forced you to read books you didn't want to read. So if this book becomes the next Romeo and Juliet or Grapes of Wrath, and teachers make their students write book reports on this book, then I'll make it easy for all of you. In the description of this video, I will create an already completed book report for this book. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. James, won't the teachers know if all the book reports are the same? Yes, they will, which is why I added some blank spaces for you to put in your own words. It's sort of like a Mad Lib that you turn in for homework. And this book report doesn't even have to be on my book. You can use it for any book. So if you have a book report due tomorrow, then check the link in the description. Trust me, you'll get at least an 80%. You know, the people who already pre-ordered this book are pretty ballsy. They don't even know what this book's about. For all they know, it could have just been a single picture of me laughing at all the money they gave me. But it's not that. I promise. That's just the inside sleeve. And that's the end of the video, everyone. I'll see you at VidCon. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you. Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about. So we're just going to sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So, German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merryfeet! Merryfeet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh! Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Maybe they didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm gonna make my own song about Prancer. Do, do, do. Prancer, the normal nose reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Why weren't you at elf practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce! And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies! Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family, and it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at rapping.
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, that's why you need to get a college education, James? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives. And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler. They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And, as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning, either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, hey, hey, look at me. And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, achoo! And flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling.
You said you were fucking wrong, my friend.
If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes, us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, hey James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, James, you're an unpleasant person. Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap. She wasn't that kind of person. But she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, if you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap. And I said, I don't care. Soap tastes good. All right, you big dingus. Shove this in your mouth. You won't do it. No balls. So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down.
What? Why?
Because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear.
Jesus is the
Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video. I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video. Love you, Mom. You made me like this. Me and my twin sister used to share a single Neopet account, which was a dumb decision because it was completely free to make a second Neopet account, and we already struggled at sharing things in the non-virtual world. But the reason we co-ran our Neopet account was because we didn't want to put our pets through a divorce, and because we wanted to save up our Neopoints for a paintbrush. For those of you who grew up with real video games, in Neopets, a paintbrush was a super rare item that would change your Neopet's appearance based off the paintbrush you used. There were Christmas paintbrushes, baby paintbrushes, Guy Fieri paintbrushes, and an invisible paintbrush that just turned your Neopet invisible. Why? When I said that paintbrushes were a rare item, I meant it. You see, your average Neopet paintbrush would sell for about 1 to 2 million Neopoints, and the most me and my sister had ever saved up was about 100,000. Why did you spend $3K on food? We're trying to get paintbrushes! It was Flower 67's birthday, and you spent $4K getting that stupid jacket! The jacket is cool, and you know it! One day, my sister went searching in the back alleys of the internet for other ways to obtain a paintbrush, and she stumbled upon this website that said, get free paintbrushes. And all she had to do was enter in her username and password, and they'd send us a fairy paintbrush. Ooh. And in a moment of desperation, she entered in the login details of our shared account into a shady website, and you'll never guess what happened next. We log into our account, and there were 3 fairy paintbrushes in our inventory, and just kidding, we got hacked. And we lost all 100,000 of our Neo points, and we never got the paintbrush we were promised. But we learned a valuable lesson that day, which was, people will try to scam you, so trust no one. We were lucky enough to only lose virtual money, but some people aren't that lucky. On the internet, you have to deal with people trying to scam you constantly. There's probably comments underneath this very video of people using my name and profile picture saying, click on this link and get a free gift card, and they always use a stupid amount of emojis so their comment sticks out more. I thought it was obvious that those comments were fake, but some people still fall for them. Listen, we need to get one thing straight about our relationship. If I ever use this many emojis, I want you to shoot me. Scammers like to target non-tech-savvy people, or what I like to call babies and baby boomers. There's a lot of things you can do to help prevent people from taking advantage of you on the internet, but my rule of thumb is that if something sounds too good to be true, it is. No one's giving out free gift cards, your long-lost uncle didn't wire transfer you money, and you can't get free paintbrushes. You can't cheat the system, that's just life, man. Also, if you ever get a pop-up saying your computer has a virus, call this number to fix it. Don't. A guy with an Indian accent named Jason will charge you real money to fix the virus, but won't do anything. Cause you never had a virus in the first place. But those are all illegal scams. People go to jail over those scams. Identity theft is not a joke, Jim. Millions of families suffer from it every year. However, there are some scams that are, for some unknown reason, completely legal. And frankly, I think we should reopen Alcatraz for the people who do these scams. So here's my list for the top 4 legal scams that shouldn't be legal. The first legal scam is mobile games. I was doing a show with this 9-year-old kid named Araya, and in the show he was gonna punch me like this. And one day while we were rehearsing, Araya asked me, can I play some games on your phone? So I gave him my phone and his dad told me, hey man, I don't even trust my kid with my phone. And I thought, what's the worst thing he can do besides tweet something or delete my YouTube channel? But he did something so much worse. He downloaded a free game, and inside the game, you could buy a VIP member version that gave you extra lives and more skins. The thing that was a scam was that the app gave you the VIP member free for 3 days, then charged you $6 a week. That's $1 a day, not including Thursdays, to play some stupid mobile game. It's more expensive than a Netflix subscription and a tasty hot and ready $5 Little Caesars pizza. Now, some of you might be thinking, okay, yeah, that's a ridiculous price for a mobile game, but that's not a scam. They tell you how much it's going to cost right there on the screen. But here's the thing. Roughly 0 people bought the VIP member pass because they were fans of the game and didn't mind the price. No one is willing to pay a weekly bill for a game where all you do is this. But 100% of the people who paid for the subscription are kids using their parents' phone and bought the VIP pass because they have no concept of money. And you don't even have to enter in your credit card information, so it's easier for kids just to hit the purchase 6,000 gems button. It's targeting kids and I don't like it. Scam. I wish I had the confidence of a mobile game developer to charge someone $312 a year to play their stupid game. My proposal to fix this scam is to ban mobile games entirely and everyone play Tetris 99. Nintendo Online is cheaper than the VIP club subscription anyway. The second legal scam is college. Textbooks. We live in a society where all human knowledge and misconceptions are contained on the internet. But if you print out that knowledge and bind up the pages, suddenly you made a best-selling book that people are required to buy. There are some textbooks that are just a CD or a code that you need a computer to even access the book, so what's the point of buying the textbook if you have a computer that's connected to the internet in the first place? And don't tell me that the books are better for people that don't have internet. I know you have an internet connection, cause come on. My solution to this scam is to drop out and make YouTube videos. The third legal scam is psychics. I don't want to debate whether or not psychics are real, because they're not, my horoscope told me so. My belief is that no one can talk to dead people because we're not living in a cartoon. And it just makes me sick that there are psychics who are taking advantage of people who are grieving and are so desperate to talk to their loved ones again that they'll try anything, even paying people to lie to them. Ooh, I burned my finger on that hot take. Now, I don't think that every psychic out there is trying to scam people. Most of them are. But I do think there are some psychics who legitimately believe that dead people use them as a vessel to talk to their living relatives. And in their three eyes, they are helping and giving their clients closure. I understand that a very small percentage of them are just trying to help. But it doesn't matter because they're all fake. My solution to this scam is that you don't pay a psychic unless they can guess how much money you're going to pay them. Should be close to zero, hopefully. And the last legal scam is multi-channel networks. Wait, do you guys hear that? It sounds like bridges being burned. When your YouTube channel starts growing, you'll get contacted by a multi-channel network, or MCN, and they'll make empty promises that if you join their network, they can help your channel grow and earn more money. And they'll brag about how many people are in their network, when really that just means there's less of a chance they'll care about you. And all you have to do to join is give them a percentage of your YouTube money every month. And once you sign your soul away, what a network will actually do is nothing. Except take a cut of your money every month. It's like showing your dog a tennis ball and then pretending to throw it, and then when the dog realizes he's chasing nothing, he's already signed a 3-year contract to keep chasing the fake ball. I know this last scam might not apply to everyone watching, but if this video helps at least one up-and-coming YouTuber to not join an MCN, then it will have been worth it. So that's my list for the top 4 legal scams that should not exist and die. I don't think this video is going to actually change anything. People will always be greedy and try and get money any way they can. So if there's anything you should take away from this video, is that I'm giving away free gift cards! Click the link in the description to claim your prize!
Good morning, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my list of the top 4 legal scams that should be illegal. If there's any psychics in the audience that I offended, you should have known before watching this video that I don't agree with you. And if there's any MCNs watching this video, please stop emailing me. So I'm really excited to announce some Halloween merch, which includes a freaking Halloween costume. I know it's August, but I don't really get a lot of chances to update you guys on things, so we're doing it now. If you want to get your hands on a costume, you should order it soon, because we only ordered a certain amount of costumes, so once they sell out, they won't be ready until next year. If you have any questions about the sizing or the shipping, then be sure to ask my business email. Thank you for watching this video and sticking around to listen to the end card. I know a lot of people click off once the end card starts, but at least you're cool. A big thanks to everyone who worked on this video, and until next time, wear your seatbelt.
I almost lost a $1,000 scholarship because of plagiarism. Let's talk about that. Plagiarism. Adverb. The practice of taking someone else's work or ideas and passing them off as one's own. Just the word plagiarism sounds like a crime. Racism, sexism, and plagiarism. I'm not here to talk about people who repost my comics, JPEG'd, cut my name off, and have the audacity to put their own watermark on. Nah, not that kind of plagiarism. I'm gonna tell you about all the times that I plagiarized in school. And, okay, just off topic, I wanna address something publicly. I don't go looking through other people's comics and go, oh, this comic's funny, I'm gonna redraw it and pass it off as my own. No, I'm not about that life. But some of my comics have been very similar to other people's comics. I read a lot of comics, so it's possible I saw them and then repressed them in my memory and drew them again, or it's possible that it's all a coincidence and me and someone else just came up with the same idea. It happens all the time with other cartoonists, not just me. Again, I don't purposely take comic ideas and try and pass them off as my own. Whenever people point out that my comic is a lot like someone else's, I get really sad. So you guys should check out these other cartoonists, they're really good. Anyway, I just wanted to say that at the beginning of the video because I'm going to be telling you about times that I actually did plagiarize. But that was just in school, okay? I keep plagiarism off the internet. Isn't that right, Matthew? I cheated a bit in school. An occasional glance at my partner's desk, maybe jot down that important equation on my hand, nothing too big. I had a math class where we went to lunch in the middle of the class, and whenever we had tests, the teacher wouldn't split the test into two parts. Do you expect us not to exchange notes? The first time that I got caught cheating was in 9th grade. And if you stalk me and watch my old videos, you know that I went to a preparatory school my freshman year. And in preparatory school, the amount of work they gave you as kids was just stupid, so cut me some slack. In one class, we had to write an essay about something historical or something, and I chose to write about the Berlin Wall, specifically about people who escaped across the Berlin Wall. Now, I chose this topic because, I don't know if you know this, but there's a National Geographic documentary about this exact topic. So I didn't copy and paste anything into my essay, per se. It's just I told the exact same stories in the exact same order as the documentary, and, okay, I might have wrote some things down word for word. But at least I didn't plagiarize it from Wikipedia, okay? So I didn't copy and paste anything until I had to write the conclusion of the essay. And I found this article talking about it, and the article said some things that would have been perfect in my essay, so... Control-C, Control-V. I turned it in, I didn't think too much of it, but then when I got it back, the conclusion paragraph had been highlighted and a "see me" was written next to it. So I had gotten in trouble for plagiarizing the conclusion. Just the conclusion. Nothing else. To be honest, I'd kind of forgotten that I copied and pasted the conclusion. I thought he knew that I basically turned in a script of a documentary. The teacher, who we'll call Mr. Batman, it makes sense if you knew him, he took me outside of the classroom, he told me that it was bad that I plagiarized, and he called my parents that freaking snitch. My parents got mad at me too. He gave me a chance to rewrite the essay, and I remember just being so traumatized and stressed out that night, I kept thinking, what if he finds a documentary and sees that I practically plagiarized the whole essay? I ended up rewriting not only the conclusion, but the whole freaking essay. I turned in the new essay, and I don't think he ever found out that I copied the whole thing. Except, I did just admit it, and he watches my videos. Seriously, in April he emailed me and asked if I was the same James that was in his class. He's the only teacher to ever reach out to me, and even after all those years, I still didn't tell him that I plagiarized the whole thing. So, hi Mr. Batman. You can't change my grade now, can you? But that was a good experience for me to have. It taught me a valuable lesson, because I didn't plagiarize a single essay for the rest of high school. But then community college rolled around. I did community college for a bit because I couldn't afford university on a subway payroll. I took honors and AP classes in high school. I was a relatively good student, except I didn't take any of the AP tests. So when I went to community college, I had to take classes that were a step below the classes I took in high school. What a great way to spend my time! Senior year of English, we were writing essays analyzing poetry. Freshman year of college, we were writing movie reviews. And the teacher didn't even like me. She thought I was a slacker because I was never paying attention. I didn't take community college seriously, but it was so easy, I was still getting amazing grades. On the third semester of community college, I took a public speaking class. Now, I might be an introvert, but I don't have a problem with public speaking. That's part of my job now. I took the class because it would be an easy A, and I needed a communications credit for my major. I wanted to be a math teacher, and you may not have noticed, but they publicly speak all the time. So I take the class, I'm like the best person in the class, right? And for the final, we had to give a persuasive speech in front of everyone. Oh, and by the way, I didn't learn, like, any tricks to help with public speaking. The whole class was literally just us giving speeches to each other over and over. So three semesters of doing easy classes and wasting my time, my apathy meters were just off the charts. I didn't want to work too hard, so I chose to do my speech on why we should get rid of the penny. And I don't know if you know this, but there's this YouTube video made by CGP Grey that makes great arguments on why we Americans should get rid of the penny. Again, I didn't copy and paste anything per se, it's just the speech I gave had the exact same arguments in the exact same order as CGP Grey. Okay, it was pretty much a one-for-one recreation of his whole video. I'm sorry, I thought we were getting graded on public speaking, not writing original speeches. The teacher caught me, I guess she's a fan of CGP Grey, and gave me a zero on the final. So I ended up getting a D in the class, and that was the worst grade I got in community college. Part of me was like, whatever, I don't care. This next semester, though, I wanted to go to a real college, and still trying to be economical, I found that it was actually cheaper for me to go to an out-of-state school than to go in-state. At this school, they gave scholarships to out-of-state students who had high enough GPAs and enough credits. It would have saved me thousands of dollars. And I had family living in this state, so that was another reason why I wanted to go to that school. But here's the thing. Even with that D, I still had a high enough GPA to get the scholarship, but since I failed, it didn't count as a credit, so I ended up being one credit short for what was required. Plagiarizing was going to cost me thousands of dollars. My options were either stay home and do a one credit semester of community college, or beg the university to give me my scholarship anyway. During Christmas, my family visited the state the school was in, so me and my dad got the chance to go to the school and basically talk our way into getting the scholarship. We talked to 5 different people. Now that's public speaking. I had to use my persuasive talking skills that I would have learned. And all of them were telling us, there's nothing we can do. But we were talking to one lady. She was telling us the same thing about not being able to do anything. She looked at my transcript. She said, oh, you failed public speaking. She looked at it for a bit. She typed something on her computer. She printed out a piece of paper and handed it to me saying, it's okay, I'm not good at public speaking either.
She thought I was bad at public speaking! She thought I failed because I was insecure or something and not because I did something wrong.
Oh, I'm just terrible at speaking to the public.
So really, there was something you could do. I got the scholarship because a lady wearing a lot of eyeshadow took pity on me. But I only ended up staying a semester and a half at that school because my YouTube kicked off, and now I'm doing that full time. But I'm still thankful I got the scholarship. I hope my public speaking teacher could see where I am now. I speak in front of millions of people for my job. I mean, I can't see them and I'm just reading everything off a script in my closet. And I didn't get punished for plagiarism. I didn't learn my lesson. And I didn't learn anything in your class.
At my Subway, you would spend your entire 5 to 6 hour work shift with only one other person. And you didn't get to pick that peculiar partner you were spending your precious period with. So that meant I was stuck with some crazy characters. And one of those characters was really, really into that new age snorting healing crystals kind of stuff. And he would specifically talk to me about it because I was the only other person there and all we could do for fun was watching bread rise. Since I was contractually obligated to stay, I would just listen to him ramble about how he thought the universe worked. He told me about chakras and how easy it was to open your third eye through LSD. He told me about scrying using black mirrors and that it's a common misconception that you can get stuck in the mirror, but that's just a myth. That doesn't actually happen. Which is a good thing because getting stuck in a mirror is something I'm constantly worried about as an adult. Oh, and he told me that every illness is in your head and that hospitals can already cure anything, but they're not going to because if they cure you, they're going to lose a customer. So he's just going to stick to his essential oils and non-vaccinated immune system, thank you very much. Listen, you can believe whatever you want to believe, as long as it's not hurting yourself or others, okay? But denying modern medicine? No! No! No, you can't! Do that! No! Since there were still 4 hours of the workday left and I didn't want to argue with him, I would just respond with, uh-huh. He didn't do crack, or meth, or any hard drugs that I know of that would alter his perception of reality. Even though he didn't trust hospitals or doctors, he really believed in the benefits of medical marijuana. If you're ever wondering what kind of person is making your sandwiches, yes, they did give this guy a license to touch your food. Whoa, dude. My sandwich tastes like colors. I learned something about myself that day, and that is, I'm obsessed with crazy people. Even though I didn't believe a word he said, I would still ask him questions just to get him talking. Wait, so you're telling me that everything in Naruto is real? Something about talking to him and hearing his perspective was fascinating. This human that I share a planet with exists. What is a crazy person? A crazy person is not someone who has a weird hobby or owns a pet snake. A crazy person is someone who, despite having an astronomical amount of evidence pointing to one idea, believes in the latter. I'm not a psychologist, and maybe I should have consulted one before making this video, but I think crazy people have an unhealthy amount of unchecked distrust and paranoia. I don't know where to even begin talking to crazy people. Their worldview is just so much different than mine. A crazy person will think that someone who has no reason to is lying. NASA's lying about the moon landing. I don't trust NASA. Hospitals are lying about medicine. I don't trust doctors. The government's lying about, well, a lot of things. They're lizard people! Okay, that one might be true. Thankfully, I don't personally know any crazy people. Well, okay, some of my friends are into astrology, but they still get vaccinated, so, you know, you win some, you lose some. However, on the internet, there's an overwhelming abundance of crazy people. I'm guessing crazy people don't go outside because they think the government will target them with directed energy weapons or something. Yeah, only crazy people stay inside wasting hours of their life behind computer screens. One of my guilty pleasures is that while I'm working, I will listen to crazy people talk for hours. It's weirdly my version of ASMR. I've tried listening to podcasts and audiobooks or anything that's good for my brain, but there's something so fascinating about listening to a 50-year-old genuinely tell you about his alien abduction.
and it only has 300 views? This man was contacted by aliens, people! Why isn't he on the cover of Time Magazine? YouTube will teach you everything you need to know about aliens. Did you know that aliens traveled millions of light years to build pyramids, stomp on our corn, and abduct a couple of crackpots? There's videos of people who will tell you in full confidence about the gray and praying mantis aliens living among us. I mean, the videos barely have any views, but they exist. Most of the views are from me. Okay, all of them. I don't understand how people think the moon landing was faked. There is so much evidence proving that the moon isn't even real. Wake up, sheeple! I gotta be honest, I don't think flat earthers are real. I think they're all just a bunch of trolls trying to get people like me to hate humanity. I'm no rocket scientist, but I know that our understanding of space and gravity is so beyond what shape the earth is. I'm amazed how much free information is available to people, but they still choose not to believe it. So I'm sorry, I just can't accept that flat earthers are real. I mean, I have nothing to back up this idea, though. I guess it's just a crazy theory of mine. Wait. Here's a lighthearted conspiracy for you. Some people think that the creators of the Sonic movie purposely made the design of Sonic bad in the first trailers as a marketing ploy. Everyone was outraged about the bad designs and ended up talking about it, giving the movie free promotion. Meanwhile, the executives were planning to use the better designed Sonic all along. The evidence for this is... well, I'm talking about the Sonic movie right now, so I'm contributing to the theory that this was all for publicity. Another piece of evidence is... look at this. What is this? There's no way that any executive or anyone with two eyeballs would okay this ever. And honestly, I might have believed this conspiracy theory if this movie didn't exist. If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too. But because it's current year and these types of things can still get past test screenings, I think sometimes Hollywood is just no good. I could be totally wrong though. If anyone watching worked on this movie and wants to be a whistleblower, let me know in the comments. Another rabbit hole I fell down was discovering a group of people called targeted individuals. Targeted individuals are a group of people that think the government is sending NSA agents to harass them. And this isn't just the American government, it turns out that every government in the world is harassing random citizens. They claim that they're being harassed because the government is trying to silence them for speaking the truth, when in reality, they're not speaking anything remotely true. A targeted individual will say things like, "People keep following me! There's a white van that's been parked in front of my house for hours! The government's been using electromagnetic radiation to transmit sounds and thoughts into my head!" And the whole time I'm watching these people, I'm thinking, "Yo, that sounds like schizophrenia, my dude. I don't know your life. Maybe you just got out of a really bad cult and you do have stalkers following you. Okay, yes, that happens. But it's not the government." One targeted individual I saw said that the government attacked them with a directed energy weapon and that they've been having migraines and coughing up blood. And I'm just flabbersmacked that someone actually believes this. How do you tell them, "Yo, the government's not harassing you. You probably have something going on in your digestive system. You need to see a doctor and a psychiatrist." And it's easy to point and laugh and make fun of these people, but after hearing their stories, I just feel bad for them. They are going through some major mental stuff, and I think they just need a friend to talk to. Most conspiracies can be disproven with a little bit of research, so it's important to think critically and not immediately believe everything you hear online. And if there's not enough data to make a judgment, then it's okay to say, "I don't know," or "I need to look into this further before making a conclusion." Viral misinformation punishes everybody, so it's important to do research, tests, and evaluations to form a concrete judgment before you hit that retweet button. There is one conspiracy theory, I believe, and that is that Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill...
Hey, this is kind of like a part two video. I mean, you don't have to have seen the part one video to understand what I talk about in this video. But I mean, if you haven't watched part one, you should. So I used to work at Subway, and to be honest, about 80% of the customers were fine. Sometimes they would do something that would just personally annoy me, like ask for a meatball on flatbread. So don't feel too bad for me. Like sometimes people would ask me, "Can I have a turkey with lettuce, tomatoes?" Whoa, slow down! What kind of bread? Footlong or 6-inch? What kind of cheese? Is it toasted? Then we'll talk about vegetables! And every time someone brought in a list, there would always be something missing on it. Always! I never had someone come in with a complete list. I would ask someone, "What kind of cheese? And they would say, ah, they didn't specify. Well then, if they didn't care enough to remember cheese, I guess they'll get Swiss. If anyone watching is currently working at a Subway, then feel free to use these tricks. If someone asked me,
What kind of cheese do you recommend?
I would always say provolone, because it's the easiest cheese to pull apart with gloves on. Really, if anyone asked me what I recommended, I would just tell them the easiest thing for me to do. But even after I gave my insightful provolone cheese recommendation, sometimes people would still say,
I'll take American.
Why do you even ask me what cheese I would recommend if you're not going to take it seriously? Another thing that would annoy me is when people would say the sandwich was all done, but they didn't put any sauce on it. So I would ask, any sauce? And then they would be like, oh yeah, mayonnaise. Oh, why did you tell me it was all done if it wasn't? Also, the receipt machine at the store took like 7 seconds to print out the receipt. So it would be very awkward every time I would ask people, do you want your receipt? And then they would say yes, and then we would just stare at each other until the receipt printed. So what I did every time someone swiped their credit card, I would just stare off into space, and in my head, I would count to 5. And then I would ask, do you want your receipt? And by the time they said yes, it was like magic. As soon as they said yes, the receipt printed. At Subway, you only work with one other person. So if someone got annoyed and said, let me talk to your manager, I would just look at them and go, listen, I've been here the longest. The only other person in this store is a 16-year-old girl, and she technically isn't old enough to use a toaster, so I'm probably your best bet. I'm the manager. Like, do people think the manager will automatically take their side and give them free stuff? Yes, actually they do think that, because it happens all the time. I would consider myself a pretty laid-back Subway employee. I didn't like to be stingy with people, even though I was disobeying the Subway formula on purpose. Oh, you want more than 6 olives on your foot long? Sure. Here, have a 5th slice of cheese. $1.50 for avocado? I'll charge you 75 cents, buddy. I probably shouldn't be saying these things, you know, in case this whole YouTube thing flops and I need a job. So I wasn't really strict on the rules. You know those fast food workers who are strict? No, we won't serve breakfast at 10:02. Get out. But being pretty laid back still didn't stop people from being annoying. So this one person comes in and asks for 2 foot-long pastrami sandwiches. And pastrami is our most expensive sandwich. It's about $10 for a foot-long. And guys, the pastrami is super good, but I wouldn't pay for it. I mean, it's good, yeah, but I'm not paying $10 for a foot-long. It's not worth it. So this guy, I make his 2 sandwiches, I ring him up, and I say, that'll be $20. And I guess he didn't look at the price of the sandwich on the menu, or he thought we still did the $5 foot-longs, because he said to me, I ain't paying for that. And this is when I was just starting out. I only had like a week of experience. And after he said that, I responded, well, shoot, I guess you're not paying for it. I didn't know people could do that. Hey, I want this. All right, that's $20. Nah, you don't want it? No, I want it. I'm just not paying for it. Okay, no, but actually, we did come up with a compromise. He told me that he had $12, so he ended up paying for one of the sandwiches, and I got to eat the other one. So it all worked out. This one time I was making a sandwich for a guy with a very heavy accent, and he asks for onions on the side. No big deal. We at Subway put vegetables in little cups all the time. I actually got a soup cup because the on the side cups are teeny tiny, and I start doing my thing, but then he says, no, on the side. And I think, oh, he's getting a foot long. He probably wants onions on half of it, but not the other. So I start putting onions on half the sub, but then again he says, no, on the side. At this point, I don't know what this guy wants. So I ask him, on the side of what? And then he screams, onions! And I never figured out what he was trying to say. This one old gentleman asks for sauce to be put on his vegetables, and normally we put it on top of the sandwich with the meat. And I didn't know if I heard him correctly, because I put the sauce on, and then I closed the sandwich. So your sauce would have been in the same place either way. One time, this woman tipped me and Corey $40. She wasn't annoying, I just want to sprinkle in some good customer stories. Okay, one time this Native American person came in, and I don't know if mentioning that was important to the story. He comes in and asks for 5-foot-long tunas. Okay, Tyler, just me and you, let's do this! And then when we're all finished, we ring him up and we say, anything else? And he says, 7 meatballs. What? He wanted 7 more sandwiches. But James, you're Subway. You're supposed to make people sandwiches regardless of how many they ask for. Yeah, I know, but the guy could have handled it differently. Normally for a platter, you have to call in at least an hour ahead, and that's only 5-foot-longs. This guy could have called ahead and said, hey, I'm getting 12 sandwiches, so just prepare yourselves. Mentally. I mean, we had so many customers waiting in line. No, we didn't. That's a lie. It was only him. But still, this one woman, I was making her sandwich, and for vegetables, she asks for extra lettuce. So I put on a big handful, but then she asks for more. So I put more on. More! And sprinkle some on. More! I won't be able to close the sandwich with any more lettuce. And she says, that's fine. All right, extra lettuce it is. So I ended up giving her an open sandwich with a mountain of lettuce. You know we do salads, right? When I was little, I always thought if I was working at a store and someone tried to rob me, I wouldn't give them any money. But now it's like, psh, I ain't risking my life for Subway. Here, take the cash register. So thankfully, I've never had anyone pull a gun on me, but I have caught people stealing from us. I was making someone's sandwich, and this one kid asks for just a water cup, so I gave it to him. So I go back to making a sandwich, and I just hear the fuzzy soda sounds being dispensed. And I look over, and the kid is putting soda in the cup. He didn't even try to hide it. When I put soda in a water cup, I at least wait for the employees to go in the back, but I didn't even say anything. I was just like, alright, man. This guy, I totally saw him take a bag of chips, and he hid it under the counter so I couldn't see. So when I rang up his sandwich, I asked, anything else? And he said, nope. Alright, whatever. Okay, last story. I was in the back and was playing some Clash of Clans, and we have a computer that shows what the cameras see, and I see this woman who was eating there. She reached over the counter and took three large cups, and I did nothing to stop it. You know, I'm the kind of person that's like, the fast food employee is always right. Say if I was eating somewhere, and I asked for a chicken salad, and they said, we only have tuna salad. I'm the kind of person that's like, oh, well, I guess I'm having the tuna salad then.
A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays, but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure. Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud. After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena.
I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke.
By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh! Oh my god.
Hey, do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon?
No. I'm good.
Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him.
Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Iggy the Zigzagoon.
I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to.
What's that, Iggy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Iggy. I can't use these.
Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish.
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant
fighting-type weakness.
It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with.
Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup? The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay!
After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water-ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing. Now what? Do I go here? Here? How did I get here? During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have Harbor Mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs?
Dolls?
I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Iggy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man!
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought, fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an ever-
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own Floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat? Okay, that's kind of cool. As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So, by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now, you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay!
Thankfully, Kidmup, who I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's body slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us. Okay, Goat, I know you're the goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel wing.
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No! What do we do? What do we do? None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but... Hey, Iggsy. Are you aware of the concept... taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggsy. With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat. I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please punch this turtle's head off without falling in love? We earned our fourth gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggsy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up two Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
Web nuts.
God! Okay, team, I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater. No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! Dude! Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved him into Golbat, and then... Here you go, daycare lady! Alright, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here. At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying-type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you... Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
All right, through this. Oh, figured it out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Are you going to use the hyper potion?
No!
I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge, I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching, I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building. And for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So, Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance at a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom. But alas. I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf. And with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it. Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay. No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our 8th gym badge, we could finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard. And as a reward, you'll each be receiving... a piece of candy.
You get a 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 candy.
And you get a candy.
This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves, and my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to Earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the fourth member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green. Ah!
Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think... because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird, but I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him a dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness.
We had cleared four champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the fifth member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret fifth boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger. Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradily with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing. Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched! It's probably because the special defense went up!
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it three separate times.
Of course! Of course you were!
Stop me!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community, too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No!
Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off! Right? I didn't even have to... No! No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No! No, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup! Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor two of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks! I hated that!
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude!
Brew Wumples, dude.
Dude.
Nothing, dude.
Dude!
Oh, dude! Stop falling in love! No!
Tackle's so bad, dude.
Body is lava, dude.
Don't give him a chance to recover, dude.
Dude,
stop it. Bash their skull in, dude.
That was my psychic ice type, dude.
You want to know something sad? I've earned more money from the two Subway videos I made about working at Subway than I did actually working at Subway for over a year. So here we go! Subway Part 3, baby! I still got more to say. I used to work there, in case you didn't know that. When I moved out and was all on my own for college, I was feeling a little lonely and homesick. So one day I decided, hey, I'm gonna get some Subway for lunch. Food that I used to almost eat every day and got for free for over a year, I was gonna pay full price for. I just wanted a taste of home. I wasn't expecting to ever tell this story, but it turns out the employee making my sandwich was a huge idiot! As I was waiting in line, I noticed my favorite sandwich, the Turkey Italiano, wasn't on the menu. The Turkey Italiano, by the way, is the same as the Italian BMT, but instead of ham, you put on turkey. Very simple change. I asked the worker, "Do you guys have the Turkey Italiano?" And he said, "No." So then I asked, "Can I get a BMT, but instead of ham, I have turkey?" And you know what he said to me? He said, "No." I don't think I'm asking for too much. At my Subway, the BMT and the Turkey Italiano were the same price, okay? And what do you mean, no, you can't put on turkey? Who's stopping you? I know for a fact that you don't count the slices of turkey at the end of the night. Just hook me up, please. I'm feeling sad. So I just got the BMT with all the vegetables because it's more food for the same amount of money and I was a poor college student. And also because screw that guy. Have fun trying to close that sandwich. But then when he was all done, he put my sandwich by the cash register and then he just started helping the next customer. And they hadn't even started making their sandwich. Just ring me up so I can leave and then help the next person. But no, I had to wait for him to finish this person's sandwich. If I wasn't so nice, I would have just took the sandwich and walked off. But I didn't. Because I'm so nice. I've realized telling you that story, it sounds like I'm one of those customers who complain about everything and say, "Let me talk to your manager." But really, the whole time I just stood there awkwardly. But I think I can complain a little bit. I used to work at a Subway. I know how things are supposed to work. Subway, if you're somehow watching this, you need to hire more people. Like me. Speaking of me, when I was working at Subway, I never liked wearing my name tag because when I was making people's sandwiches, I hated it when complete strangers would say, "Thanks, James. How did you know?" Oh, right, the name tag. So I never wore my name tag. I just work at Subway, okay? We don't need to know each other on a first name basis. Just take your food. For some reason, I don't like it when strangers know my name. But now that's all thrown out the window. This one time a customer came in and for some reason I couldn't help but feel like I'd seen her somewhere before. Her face was so familiar, but I couldn't put my finger on it. So I made her sandwich, I rang her up, she paid for it, and as she grabbed her stuff she said, "Yeah, I'm going up to my father's funeral this weekend. After my mother died, he couldn't last that long." Oh, that's why I remember her! She came in last week telling me the same story! What are you supposed to say to that? "Yeah, that really sucks. I'm just some underpaid sandwich artist with really bad people skills." Did she really not have anyone else to talk to? That just makes it extra sad. I ended up giving her a free cookie. I'm just kidding. No, I didn't. Luckily, my coworker Corey heard this and he talked to her and he was very nice. Corey's a lot better at being nice to people. One time I was closing the store, I turned off the open sign and I was opening the front door to bring in a table and chair from outside. But while I was bringing in the table, these two old guys got out of their car and asked, "Are you guys closed?" "Yep," is what I would have said if I wasn't so nice. Instead, I said, "Ugh, fine." Even though it was past 10, I let them order their sandwiches. When they came in, the 16-year-old girl I was working with was not happy. They started apologizing for coming in so late. "Oh, I didn't realize places in Arizona closed so early. Blah, 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 we're vampires." And I said, "Ugh, it's whatever, just order your sandwiches." And then he said, "Can I have 3 salads?" And I actually laughed. But he didn't laugh. "Oh, you're being serious. I let you in past closing and you want 3 salads? Do you know how many dirty dishes that'll make?" As I was making this guy's 3 salads and 16-year-old girl was making the other guy's 2-foot-long sandwiches, a third guy not associated with these two came in. Guess he didn't see the open sign not illuminated. I finished helping the 2 old guys and then I started helping the third guy and he asked, "What time do you guys close?" 15 minutes ago. But after everything was said and done, the 2 old guys tipped us $5 and the third guy tipped us $1. So I mean, between me and the 16-year-old girl, a $3 tip ain't so bad. I actually heard from one of my old coworkers that the husband and wife owners of my old Subway watched my 2 other Subway videos. So they might be watching this one, and I just wanted to say that by letting those 3 guys in, I showed initiative and was looking out for customer satisfaction. Yeah. One time I brought a laser pointer into work because I knew I'd be bored, and I was. Except the boy I was working with was shining it outside at the cars driving by, and I told him not to do that because it's probably stupid illegal and really dangerous. Later, I was going to go clean the bathrooms. I saw the laser pointer on the counter, and I said, "Hey dude,
while I'm cleaning the bathrooms, don't shine the laser pointer at the cars. I told him that. When I was all finished cleaning, though, I saw him sitting by the window just shining the laser at the cars. At first, I wanted to go up to him and say, dude, stop. But then the other part of me thought, I'm not this kid's dad. I told him to stop twice and he didn't listen. Whatever happens is his problem. He ended up getting fired. Yeah, a lady came in and said, let me talk to your manager. And I said, I can give you her phone number. And boom, he got fired. I know I'm the one who brought in the laser pointer, but I don't really blame myself for him losing his job. That was a stupid thing for you to do, kid. Once again, I was the good employee. I mean, I didn't show that much initiative that time, though. So before I worked at Subway, I like to go to this taco place and get the same thing every time, the carne asada fries. Later, I learned that the carne asada fries are 2,000 calories. That was the only thing I ever got at this taco place. And I used to be super self-conscious thinking, man, these employees must think I'm so weird coming in getting the same thing over and over. But then when I worked at Subway, I learned, ha, nope, fast food employees don't care about you or your order. Unless you're mean to them or tell them that you're going to your dad's funeral, fast food employees will not remember you. One time someone came in and told me, I'll have the usual. And I said, I've literally never seen you before in my entire life. I didn't really say that. If any of you are working at a really slow Subway, here are some fun games for you to play. Cut up a loaf of bread into small pieces and make a mini sandwich with one meat and three different vegetables. Give it to your coworker and have them eat it without looking. Then they have to guess what's on the sandwich. And that's it. You can set up a point system, like they get 1 point for every ingredient they get right. Also, you can do the same game by mixing up two sodas and have them guess. You can walk into the freezer and see how long you can last. My record's an hour. You can bring in some vanilla ice cream and just make all sorts of stuff with that. You can make root beer floats. You could take two cookies and put ice cream between them and make a cookie ice cream sandwich. 16-year-old girl made this thing. I think it was called the Kazuki. You put cookie dough in a bowl and then you cooked it, but not all the way. And then you put ice cream on top of it and it was super good. You can make nachos and bread bowls, and we wasted a lot of food. I still don't know why that guy didn't give me a turkey Italiano. I mean, at my Subway, we made bread bowls and nachos. Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? I mean, remember how it ended on a cliffhanger?
What was he talking about?
Yeah! Big cliffhanger! It's been 30 years! Everyone wants to know what happened to that spider! The spider died, Ethan. Oh, I didn't watch it. But you got one thing right. Everyone is wondering what happened next. The first movie wasn't satisfying enough. America needs a sequel. Who would watch that? And then 3 years later, we can make a live-action version! Now you're speaking my language, Ethan. Everyone else, you're fired! For some reason, movie producers and showrunners think that kids are stupid and don't know what good content is. They probably think that as long as a kid's show is a cartoon and it's moving, they'll love it. Well, here's the truth, Hollywood. The cartoons don't have to move, but you do need to write likable characters and a plot that actually makes sense. The only people who know what kids like these days are YouTubers. Am I right, fellow youths? Hashtag let Pokemon go to the polls. I thought I had pretty low standards as a kid, but sometimes I'd be watching a show and even I'd think, this is weird. Why does this need to exist? Why are the animals singing? One of my favorite shows growing up was Yu-Gi-Oh! Anyway, because I'm an adult, I bought and framed 3 Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
And dang it, these cards are too small to even fit in the frame.
I don't even know why I liked Yu-Gi-Oh! So much. It was basically just anime characters playing the exact same card game over and over. Yu-Gi-Oh! Would be losing, he would give a speech about friendship or the heart of the cards, and then he would draw the Yu-Gi-Oh! Must Win card. And most of the time, he wouldn't even play by the rules. And then rinse and repeat that formula for 200 more episodes and 4 spin-offs, and you got yourself a successful anime. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the first sign that gaming channels were going to be a thing. Kids just love watching other people play games. Because they suck at them. Okay, enough about Japanese cartoons. If Yu-Gi-Oh! Was able to keep my hyperactive attention span engaged, then what TV shows did I think were weird, even as a kid? Keep in mind that these opinions are coming from someone who thought the Star Wars prequels were good. So, Misa, take it with a grain of salt. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. To be fair, I've never seen a single episode of TMNT. From what I hear, it's a good series, but just the concept by itself was enough for my kid brain to think, this show is silly and I'm not gonna watch it. Like, come on. Ninja Turtles? That's a little weird, seeing that turtles are slow and aren't very maneuverable.
Help, I'm a turtle and I can't get up!
They're mutants? Okay, I guess that makes sense. And they're teenagers? Teenagers are mean to me. This is where I draw the line. Those are 3 adjectives that don't belong in a sentence together. And they're named after famous Renaissance artists? Why don't you just give them normal turtle names, like
Sheldon! Whatever. Let's go watch a real show about Japanese people playing card games. I used to think that the Powerpuff Girls was a girly TV show, and so I never watched it. But then the show got rebooted, and everyone on the internet was saying how much they used to love the original, and all I could think was, man, if only I wasn't a sexist baby. Do you guys remember Zaboomafoo? Zaboomafoo was the show on PBS Kids where a lemur and these two brothers named the Krat Brothers would teach kids all about wild animals. I always thought that the two brothers were named the Krap Brothers, and I only just learned their real names right now when I looked up how to spell Zaboomafoo. Also, they have a website, and it looks like this. Anyway, one of the episodes was all about eggs. The Krap Brothers talked all about